Good morning. My name is Jeremy, and I will be your conference operator today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to the Sequel Communications Third Quarter 2012 Earnings Call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question during that time, simply press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, press the pound key. Thank you. I will now turn the call over to our host, Mr. Pete Abel, Senior Vice President of Corporate Communications. Sir, you may begin.
Thank you. Good morning and welcome to this discussion of the third quarter results for Sequel Communications Holdings One, LLC, and its subsidiaries, which do business as Suddenlink Communications. Before we get started this morning, we'd like to remind you that certain statements made during this conference call might be considered forward-looking statements within the meaning of the Private Securities Litigation Act of 1995. Those statements are subject to the various risks and uncertainties described in our annual report, which is posted to our website. These risks and uncertainties could cause actual future results to differ materially from the results expressed or implied by any forward-looking statements made on this call. The information discussed today will be based on our earnings release for the period ending September 30, 2012. Both our earnings release and quarterly report have been posted to the Investor Relations section of our website at suddenlink.com. The release compares actual and pro forma financial and operating results for the third quarter and first 9 months of 2012 and 2011. Today, our presenters will focus their comments on year-over-year pro forma results for the third quarter. The pro forma information they discuss today includes the acquisition of MPG Cable on April 1, 2011, and excludes the disposition of MP3 Now on June 1, 2012, as if those transactions had been completed on January 1st, 2011. With that, I'll now turn the call over to our CEO, Jerry Kent. Jerry?
Thanks, Pete. Good morning, and thanks for joining us. Today, we're pleased to discuss our third quarter 2012 performance, which adds to our long track record of successful operating results. Revenue in the third quarter totaled $511.9 million. A 6.1% increase over the same quarter last year. Third quarter adjusted EBITDA was $191.2 million, a 7.6% increase over the year ago period. Our 2012 year-to-date revenue and adjusted EBITDA increased 6.3% and 8.2% respectively compared to the first 9 months of 2011. Free cash flow in the third quarter this year was $35.1 million. More than twice the free cash flow generated in the same quarter last year. Free cash flow was $79.7 million for the first 9 months of 2012. Revenue-generating units, or RGUs, now total nearly 3.53 million, an increase of 49,600 in the third quarter and an increase of 144,300 in the trailing 12 months, representing 4.3% annual growth. ARPU, or average revenue per unit, in the third quarter this year was $138.86, which is 9.6% higher than ARPU in the third quarter last year. Our operating results were significantly impacted by major storms that affected our West Virginia systems early in the third quarter. Those storms left a reported 700,000 homes in the state without commercial power, many for extended periods of time. The storms impacted revenues through credits for the period of time our customers were without service, though insurance will cover a portion of the credits. In addition, our RGU growth momentum in that area was interrupted by focusing efforts on making repairs and restoring service. While this activity had an impact on third quarter operations, our team worked tirelessly and did a great job over several weeks in restoring business as usual. More recently, the winter storms that coincided with Hurricane Sandy also affected our West Virginia operations, dumping up to 2 feet of snow in some parts of the state. As a result, an estimated 200,000-plus homes in the state lost power for up to several days, and two of our cable systems in the state suffered plant damage from downed trees and tree limbs. Fortunately, the impact of this storm was much more limited than what we experienced in July. All of our central technical facilities remain operational throughout the snowstorm, and the vast majority of our customers had service once commercial power was restored. Accordingly, we expect credits for days without service to be minimal. However, once again, our efforts at restoring service diverted attention from growing the business during this period in the fourth quarter. Turning to capital resources, I'm pleased to report that we've now completed our three-year, $350 million project Imagine. That investment continues to help us grow market share by extending our market-leading broadband internet speeds to a larger audience and further strengthening advanced services such as high-definition TV, all-digital lineups, and video on demand. With the completion of Project Imagine and the resulting declining capital expenditures, combined with continued growth in adjusted EBITDA, we're well-positioned to accelerate the generation of significant free cash flow and reduce financial leverage. Tom will provide more details momentarily about Project Imagine. Beyond Project Imagine, we continue to innovate and enhance our services in other ways. We have a competitive advantage in the areas where we operate, and we intend to enhance that position. For example, we've continued increasing speeds of our most popular internet services at no additional charge to our customers. Generally, our 20 meg customers now get 30 meg service, our 10 meg users now get 15, and we've doubled speeds for entry-level customers. What's more, building on our partnership with TiVo, I'm really excited about our deployment of a terrific new service with them. On October 8th in Lubbock, we became the first cable provider in the country to offer TiVo Stream. When paired with a TiVo Premier DVR from Suddenlink, TiVo Stream lets customers stream TV channels to other devices inside the home, such as iPhones and iPads, and transfer DVR recordings to those devices for viewing outside the home. Early next year, we hope to add TiVo Mini to the suite of services. TiVo Mini is a companion device to the TiVo Premier that provides customers with an even more economical whole-home DVR solution. We also continue to market compelling double and triple play bundled offerings, which lead to longer customer relationships and make our customers less vulnerable to competitive offers and churn. As of September 30th this year, we had grown total bundled customers to more than 884,000, a 5.3% increase in the trailing 12 months. Currently, 64.1% of our customers are taking two or more services, and nearly one out of four are taking three services. Between the third quarter 2011 and third quarter of this year, we grew triple play customers, who have the lowest churn, by 8.8%. As we've stated in prior calls, a majority of our gross margin today is from non-video services. Moreover, one out of six customer relationships is a non-video relationship, and the number of non-video customer relationships grew to 240,800 homes in the 12 months ending September 30th, and that's a 15.1% increase. We also continue to enjoy notable success in our commercial lines of business. Total commercial revenue grew 16.1% in the 12 months ending September 30th, while commercial data and telephone revenues on a combined basis grew 22.1% in the same period. Our carrier business has been very successful in growing our cell tower backhaul for wireless carriers that need higher bandwidth connectivity between cell towers and central offices. Already, 2012 is a record year for our fiber to the tower business, and we continue to see strong opportunity in this area. I'm especially pleased to report today that, where we're measured by the independent J.D. Power surveys, Suddenlink, once again, has the most improved customer satisfaction scores since 2007. In fact, our 2012 score, which was released just last month, is 112 points higher than our 2007 score, representing a rate of improvement that's nearly 30 points better than our peers and competitors. Now, in closing today, I want to provide a brief update on the agreement we announced July 18th, under which BC Partners and CPP Investment Board joined forces with our CFO Mary Medusky, CO Tom McMillan, and me to acquire the ownership stake of all existing holders of Suddenlink preferred and common equity. That agreement valued the company at $6.579 billion and was expected to close before the end of the year, subject to customary closing conditions, including regulatory approvals. I'm very happy to report that substantially all of the approvals have now been received, and we currently expect the acquisition to close this month. We're excited about this opportunity to begin a new chapter in Suddenlink's history, working with our new equity partners. The injection of fresh, forward-looking capital, combined with the talents of our management team and 6,000-plus employees, position us to continue providing a superior level of customer care and delivering exceptional operating results. I'll now turn the call over to Tom McMillan, our Chief Operating Officer, to provide additional perspective on our operating achievements in the third quarter. Tom.
Thanks, Jerry, and good morning, everyone. I'll expand on some of the third quarter operating results that Jerry discussed. First, I'd like to start with a word of praise for the people of Suddenlink, who have worked so hard the past 3 years on Project Imagine. Without their determination, this outstanding effort, which has finished on time and on budget, would not have been possible. We thank each and every one of them for making the benefits of Project Imagine a reality. Now on to the operating discussion. At September 30, with the completion of Project Imagine, we have achieved the following milestones, which are consistent with our original objective for the program. DOCSIS 3.0 technology was deployed to cable systems serving 93% of customers. Video on-demand service was available to 91% of basic video customers. On-demand content includes more than 10,000 titles, including more than 2,000 HD titles. Customer VOD streams in September were more than 4.25 million, about 18% higher than the number of streams in September of last year. Access to high-definition services was at 96%, and our weighted average number of HD channels was at 85, with some markets providing 100 or more HD channels. As noted on prior calls, this represents a dramatic increase from the 24 HD channels we offered, on average, before the start of Project Imagine. Over the course of Project Imagine, we have grown digital video customers 46% and HD customers 116%, and have 36 times more customers with internet speeds of 15 meg or greater. The Project Imagine data I've just mentioned does not include the NPG properties we acquired last year. As noted on previous calls, we have invested in these markets as well to connect them to our backbone and bring advanced products and services to our customers in the former MPG areas. Including the former MPG areas, the overall post-Project Imagine stats I highlighted would not change. Now to third quarter results. As Jerry noted, we added 144,300 RGUs in the trailing 12-month period. On basic video, we ended the third quarter with more than 1.23 million customers. Our modest gain of 200 during the quarter was a considerable improvement over a decline of 5,900 in the third quarter of 2011. Basic penetration of estimated homes passed at September 30 was 40.4%. On digital video, we ended the quarter with 832,600 customers, up nearly 25,000 units in the quarter. That's 3,400 more digital customer adds than during the third quarter of last year. For the trailing 12 months, we have added 79,000 digital video units, representing 10.5% growth. Digital penetration of basic video customers at the end of the quarter was 67.7%, up from 59.4% a year ago. Along with our growth in digital video, with the help of Suddenlink TiVo Premier, we saw an acceleration in DVR take rate, as we added 13,800 DVR customers during the third quarter of 2012 and 29,000 over the last 12 months, an annual growth rate of 8%. DVR penetration of digital customers was 47.1%. We also added 43,600 HD customers in the third quarter and more than 126,000 over the last 12 months, representing 28.7% annual growth. That brings HD penetration of digital customers to 67.8%, up from 58.2% a year ago. Our sell-in rate of HD to new digital customers is now more than 80%. Total penetration of advanced digital services, both DVR and HD customers, stood at 69.6% of digital customers at the end of the third quarter 2012. That was up from 60.8% at the end of the third quarter 2011. On high-speed internet, we added 17,400 residential customers as we near the 1 millionth mark, having finished the quarter with 996,800 residential customers. Since September 2011, we've added 59,600 data customers, representing 6.4% growth. As a result, residential data penetration was 33.7% of estimated data homes passed at September 30, up from 32.3% a year ago. While our quarterly internet growth was a bit below the third quarter of last year, our recent speed increases, coupled with continued growth in high bit rate applications, will position us to focus more efforts on driving customers into higher speed services. And while today more than 70% of our customers have download speeds of 15 megs or faster, only 2.1% of our residential internet customers subscribe to our 30 meg or greater services, presenting us with a significant upside opportunity. A complement to our high-speed internet service is Suddenlink Wi-Fi at home. During the most recent quarter, 38% of our new high-speed internet customers purchased this service, as we added 19,300 Wi-Fi at home customers. In the trailing 12 months, this wireless home networking service grew 65.6%, with a net gain of more than 66,500 units. On telephony, we finished the quarter with nearly 470,000 residential customers, up more than 7,000 units during the quarter, but a deceleration in growth from third quarter of last year, as growth was negatively impacted by the storms in West Virginia. In the trailing 12 months, we added 43,700 units, or 10.3% growth. As a result, residential telephony penetration at September 30 was 19%, which we estimate is only 29% market share in our service areas. We will continue to consider initiatives to drive further market share gains, including the opportunity to improve on our moderately low triple play sell-in rate for new customers of 15%. As we've discussed on previous calls, we have active network passing more than 3 million homes, we place a great deal of emphasis on growing the number of these homes we serve with one or more of our services. We refer to these as customer relationships. Year to date, we have added 5,700 of these relationships, and as of September 30, we had nearly 1.38 million total customer relationships. A significant number of these new customer relationships are non-video, higher-margin customers that have more than compensated for losses in lower margin, mostly single-play video relationships. Turning to commercial services, which are not included in our RGU counts, our 51,000 commercial internet customers at September 30 represented 9.9% growth over the trailing 12 months. And even more impressive, our 22,600 commercial phone customers represented a 36.1% increase since the third quarter of 2011. We continue to experience record-setting gains in our carrier services group. As of September 30, we had successfully installed 723 tenants, with another 632 sold and being installed, plus several hundred more in active discussions. At the same time, we are also realizing incremental revenue from existing tenants whose bandwidth demands are growing. I'd like to single out a few other initiatives briefly before closing. First, as Jerry mentioned, in connection with our Suddenlink TiVo Premier DVR service, which is available to more than 80% of our customers, we have successfully begun deployment of our new Suddenlink TiVo Stream service, and we'll follow this up with the launch of Suddenlink TiVo Mini starting in the first quarter. Second, our Connected Protected Home Security service is now available to 70% of our customers, and we grew home security customers 35.2% in the 12 months ended September 30. Third, our online service, Suddenlink To Go, is available across our entire footprint. Since we began offering this service, we've seen the number of video streams grow consistently each quarter. The quarter ended September 30 was our best yet, with more than 2 million video streams, a 69% increase over the third quarter last year. We also recently augmented Suddenlink To Go with programming from several additional cable networks, including the Pac-12 Networks, Fox News, and Fox Business. We expect to add more content over the coming months to further strengthen the appeal of this service. Thank you for your time. I'd now like to turn things over to our CFO, Mary Medusky, for a closer look at our financial results during the quarter. Mary?
Thanks, Tom. Today I'll discuss the financial results for Sequel Communications Holdings 1 and subsidiaries for the third quarter 2012, adding to what Jerry and Tom have already provided. I'll also discuss our balance sheet and liquidity position. At September 30, our total debt outstanding was approximately $4.18 billion, comprised of $1.825 billion face amount of the 8.625% senior notes at Sequel Communications Holdings 1, $2.189 billion of senior secured term loans at Sequel Communications LLC, $160 million drawn under our $500 million revolving credit facility at Sequel Communications LLC, and $6.3 million of capital leases and other obligations also at Sequel Communications LLC. At September 30, we had approximately $144.5 million of cash on hand. We had nearly $324 million available under our $500 million credit facility, revolving credit facility, after taking into account the aforementioned $160 million drawn under that facility and our $16 million letters of credit. Our secured bank leverage was 2.9 times, in compliance with our bank covenant at September 30 with significant cushion. Our total leverage was 5.4 times at September 30. Net of all cash, our leverage was 5.26 times. Regarding our interest rate hedges, our last remaining swap in the amount of $400 million expired in October. On July 18th, as Jerry mentioned, the company entered into an acquisition agreement with BC Partners, CPP Investment Board, our existing common equity owners, and Sequel 3, whereby all of the existing common and preferred equity units of Suddenlink were purchased for $2.485 billion. The resulting enterprise value is $6.579 billion, including the assumption of existing liabilities. Proceeds from the $1.985 billion of new common equity contributions from BC Partners, CPP Investment Board, Jerry, Tom, and me, plus $500 million of incremental debt will be used to acquire the ownership stake of all the existing holders of Suddenlink's preferred and common equity. The resulting equity capitalization of Suddenlink will be 30%. As Jerry mentioned, we expect the acquisition to close this month. Upon closing, Suddenlink will continue to be managed by Sequel 3 pursuant to our management agreement. As a result, this transaction will not result in a change of control under the 8.625% senior notes or the credit agreement. On July 31st, Suddenlink received an acknowledgement from the majority of our lenders under the credit agreement that a change in the management agreement with Sequel 3 will not be materially adverse to Suddenlink or the lenders. The effect of this change in the management agreement will be to allow the agreement to continue with the same services and economic terms as before. On August 6th, the company received a consent from a majority of its 8.625% senior note holders to increase the restricted payment capacity under the indenture governing these notes. This consent allows all of our new $500 million unsecured debt to be issued at Sequel Communications Holdings 1, the current high-yield issuer, instead of a newly formed super-holdco parent, thereby reducing future interest costs. Subsequently, on October 25th, two newly formed unrestricted subsidiaries of the company, Sequel Communications Escrow 1 LLC and Sequel Communications Escrow Capital Corp., issued $500 million of 6.375% senior notes due in 2020. As part of that transaction, the escrow issuer and the company entered into an agreement under which 100% of the issue price of the senior notes plus the interest that will accrue on these notes from their issue date to their latest redemption date, was deposited into an escrow account. At closing of the acquisition, the funds will be released from the escrow account, and Sequel will use the net proceeds of the 6.375% senior notes and cash on hand to fund the $500 million portion of the purchase price and to pay estimated fees and expenses related to the acquisition. Pro forma for the issuance of the 6.375% senior notes and the transaction closing, our total leverage, as defined in and calculated per the indenture governing the 8.625% senior notes, would have been 6.05 times at September 30. As defined in and calculated under the indenture governing the new 6.375% senior notes due in 2020, our total leverage would have been 5.98 times at September 30. Further, pro forma for the high yield and sale transactions, our cash balance would have been $86 million at September 30, and our pro forma effective weighted average interest rate, including the new 6.375% senior notes, would have been 6.02%. Moody's and S&P assigned ratings of B3 and B- respectively for the new notes and affirmed our other ratings, including our corporate ratings. We are approaching the first call date for the 8.625% senior notes, and we will consider refinancing options post-closing of the equity transaction. Also, in the category of subsequent events, the company signed an agreement on October 3rd to sell cable systems in Indiana and Illinois, serving approximately 3,000 basic video customers. This transaction is expected to close later in 2012, and expected cash proceeds are $4.9 million. Now for a few comments about the third quarter financial results. As Jerry mentioned, total revenue for the third quarter of 2012 was $511.9 million, representing growth of 6.1%, or $29.3 million over the third quarter 2011. ARPU was $138.86, an increase of 9.6%. Year-over-year video revenue increased 1.6%, primarily due to the video rate increases, higher broadcast retransmission and franchise fee revenue, and customer growth in our digital and advanced video services, which include converter rental revenue for high-definition and DVR-capable digital converters. Video ARPU was $75.21, up 4.8% from the third quarter of 2011. High-speed internet revenue increased 11% due primarily to an increase in residential high-speed internet customers, growth in home networking revenues, the impact of residential rate increases, growth in our commercial high-speed data services to small and medium-sized businesses, and growth in carrier services, including fiber to the tower and optical internet and transport revenues. Residential high-speed internet ARPU was $36.26, up 3% from the third quarter of 2011. Telephone revenues increased 11.8%, primarily due to an increase in residential telephone customers and, again, growth in our commercial telephone services to small and medium-sized businesses. This was offset in part by bundling and promotional discounts. Residential telephone ARPU was $28.77, down 2.2% from the third quarter of 2011. Advertising revenues increased 21.5%, largely due to higher national and local advertising sales revenue, primarily from increased political and automotive advertising. Because most of our footprint is outside the hotly contested swing states, we may not have seen as much of an increase in political advertising revenue as some of our MSO peers, especially in October and early November. Other revenues increased 8.1% due to increased administrative fee revenues, security service revenue, and commercial installation revenue. These were offset in part by lower residential installation revenue. Our commercial lines of business, embedded in the results I've already described, are comprised of commercial and bulk video, commercial high-speed internet, on- and off-net carrier sales, and commercial telephone. Commercial revenues totaled $66.2 million, or 12.9% of total revenue, and represented growth of 16.1% versus the third quarter of 2011. Within the commercial revenue category, our commercial data and telephone business grew 22.1% year-over-year on a combined basis. Our on-net carrier business, including fiber to the tower, grew 64% in the third quarter 2012 versus the year-ago period. Operating costs and expenses rose 5.2%, primarily due to higher programming costs and retransmission consent expenses, increased net labor and employee-related costs, increased telephone service expenses, higher expenses associated with our ad sales business, and increased marketing expenses, offset in part by lower third-party call center expenses. In addition, the third quarter of 2011 included $800,000 of non-recurring expenses associated with the purchase of NPG Cable, for which there were not a comparable expense in the third quarter and the 3 months ending September 30, 2012. Adjusted EBITDA for the third quarter 2012 was $191.2 million, an increase of 7.6% from the same quarter last year, resulting in an adjusted EBITDA margin of 37.3%, an increase of 50 basis points from the third quarter 2011. Third quarter 2012 capital expenditures were $87.7 million compared to $89.2 million in the third quarter 2011. That figure includes Project Imagine and success-based capital totaling $16.1 million. Project Imagine was completed as of September 30. Total capital expenditures for the three-year program, including success-based capital, were consistent with the previously announced guidance of $350 million. We expect total capital expenditures for all of 2012, including Project Imagine and related success-based capital, to be in the range of $340 to $350 million. The small increase in the high end of our previously announced guidance is due to opportunities in our commercial and carrier lines of business during the remainder of 2012, including planned enhancements to our West Texas fiber ring and new opportunities in our fiber to the tower and carrier businesses. As Jerry mentioned, free cash flow in the third quarter was $35.1 million, compared to $15.2 million in the third quarter of 2011. The $19.9 million, or 131% increase in free cash flow this quarter compared to 2011, is due to improved operating results and decreases in cash interest expense and capital spending. We would expect continued growth in free cash flow for the remainder of 2012. I'll now conclude my remarks and turn the call back over to the operator to facilitate questions. I would like to remind everyone that this is a public call and we will generally refrain from discussing information other than what is disclosed on our earnings release and quarterly report. Operator?
Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question at this time, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. We'll pause for a moment to compile the Q&A roster. Your first question comes from the line of Jason Kim.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my questions. I'll just start off with a couple of questions for Jerry. If you could remind us of any significant amounts of retrans negotiations coming up in 2013 and your initial plans for any rate increases for next year as well.
We last year, 2012, was a major retrans cycle for us. We also had a major contract expire in the middle of this year. We have successfully negotiated all of those retrans agreements. We have a couple of smaller retrans agreements due at the end of this year, including retrans with respect to a larger overall agreement that includes other cable programming. But basically, retrans, for all intents and purposes, will be put to bed very shortly for this year. So I think we're in very good shape. We are in the process of finalizing our budgets, and we'll be notifying our customers of rate increases, including the retransmission consent pass-through, and that'll be implemented basically as we speak.
Okay. And then AT&T recently announced their intention to expand the U-verse footprint a little bit. And, you know, obviously you guys don't have that much of an overlap with them currently. I think it was only just 4% of your homes passed. But if you can share any data points in terms of your market share in any U-verse territories versus non-U-verse territories currently?
We currently have less than approximately 4% of our homes passed. We compete with U-verse. We have no Fios overlap. And in total, overbuild competition, landline overbuild competition is less than 10% of homes passed. With respect to AT&T, I believe is it around 62% of our homes passed overlap with AT&T. I really don't have any insight into where AT&T will build out pursuant to their recent announcement. I will say that I'm very pleased that Project Imagine was timely and that we just completed it in the third quarter and that our systems are in very good shape should there be additional competition.
Understood. And just a quick housekeeping question for Mary. There was a small cash tax item in the third quarter. Is it a one-time thing, or should we expect small amounts of cash taxes going forward?
In certain of our states, in Texas in particular, there's a gross margin tax, and that's recorded there. So there's state taxes of a small amount, which will continue going forward in that small amount.
Okay, thank you.
Our next question is from Mike Peace with J.P. Morgan.
Hi, thank you. A few here also. Maybe start with Tom or Jerry. You mentioned in your release that you're seeing digital customers purchasing fewer tiers, I guess. Are these existing customers? Are they new ads or both? And is this a Q3 phenomenon, or has this been consistent with prior quarters, and has this been accelerating? Really just a little color on generally what's happening here.
So I'll take that, Mike. How are you doing? I would say that it's certainly consistent with what we've seen. I mean, we have in our SL200 package, we have a terrific offering, very competitive, and this is, you're really talking about customers who are subscribing either to sports and information tiers, movie tiers, family tiers, et cetera, beyond our core offering. And we've seen that phenomena happening now for many, many quarters. Our profitability on those tiers is not that significant because naturally there's costs that come with those, particularly on the sports and information tier. And so as you can see in our numbers, it really hasn't impacted our ability to grow digital customers or to grow revenues for that matter. I'd also mention with VOD and all the titles that we have on VOD, more importantly, all the free titles that we have on VOD and the time-shifted viewing that occurs there, you know, we're seeing many people take advantage of that, and that's probably having some impact on the number of either digital tiers or premium services that people are choosing to pay for.
I would just add that it's actually a conscious decision by this company that when people want to manage their bills, the first thing we would do is encourage them to look at the digital tiers and our premium services where we have little or in some cases no margin. And we would rather sell them other services if they're trying to manage their bill in a downturn in the economy. We'd rather have them manage the bill by taking less services that don't give us really any significant margin.
Great. And then can we just talk about CapEx going forward, I guess, post-Project Imagine? Historically, I think you spent anywhere from $230 to $250 million, and, you know, without asking for specific guidance because I know better, can you just talk about what could make you spend more or less than that $230 to $250 going forward per year? And obviously growth is a key variable there.
A couple of things, Mike. Good morning. First of all, we have said on prior calls that it would be our expectation to return to our pre-Project Imagine level of spending as Project Imagine winds down and we get to business as usual. That will be our objective in the coming couple of years. And you will note that on a percent of revenue basis, which is really the fair way to look at it, because that number that you referenced was prior to the acquisition of NPG. So we like to think of this as on a percent of revenue basis. So just kind of looking back to the past on a percent of revenue basis, in 2008 or 2009 could inform you on what the future could look like once we get Project Imagine behind us. And we have said in the low teens would be our goal as a percent of revenue. Hopefully that's helpful. And
yes,
we are,
it is.
And we are in the process of working on our budgets.
Great. And Mary, while I have you here, can we just talk about the capital structure? You have $145 million of cash, although I guess that's a little bit less than 90 pro forma for the pending deal. You have 160 on the revolver. I guess going forward, should we expect you to start paying down that revolver with free cash flow? And then when we think about post the change of ownership, you levered up a little bit to do that. You do have a very different free cash flow profile. How should we think about uses of free cash flow and where you'd like leverage to go over the next couple of years?
Well, to answer your question on our revolver balances, it would be our expectation as we develop free cash flow to reduce those revolver balances. That would be the prudent thing to do. And you are right, on a pro forma basis, as if the transaction occurred at September 30, our cash balances were roughly in the $90 million range. In terms of what we would do with our cash balances beyond repaying the revolver, really that's a function of what the opportunities and what the landscape looks like going forward. We haven't indicated a target leverage. We have tried hard to refrain from establishing a target leverage. We have also told our investor community that maintenance of our credit ratings from Moody's and S&P are important to us, and in fact, the transaction that we've just structured had that in mind in terms of determining opening leverage. Jerry, do you have anything else you want to add to that?
No, I think that was a good answer.
Great, thank you.
The next question is from David Phipps with Citigroup.
Hi, thank you. My questions have been asked and answered.
Great, thank you.
And again, that's star one for any further questions.
Operator, assume there are no further questions?
Correct.
Okay. Well, thank you, everyone, for your continued interest. We appreciate it, and have a great day.
Thank you.
That does conclude today's teleconference. You may now disconnect.